by the time I got to the emergency room, my primary problem had become respiratory. So the medical notes state that the primary reason for collapsing was disguised in a myriad of other respiratory and neurological problems. But probably, and this was again in the chart, that it was a simple faint, and for some reason my blood pressure dropped, or I went into some kind of cardiac event. That hasn't happened since. Certainly if this happened today in Seattle, there would be a lot more information available, but there wasn't then in the Midwest.
All right. In the state you were in, did you see anything strange with this NDE?
Yes.
What was it?
Oh, come on. Well, for the benefit of healthcare providers and loved ones who might be by a dying body, the first thing I could remember was hearing a woman's voice to my left saying, "I'm not getting a pulse, I'm not getting a pulse." And I don't remember seeing anything, but I felt like I was speaking with her as clearly as I'm speaking with you now, as a matter of fact. And she was ignoring me, so I gave up.
What do you mean you gave up?
I don't want to say I was frustrated. It was just, but I was. I've jokingly referred to this as my near-death SNP, but she would not acknowledge the fact that I was clearly saying that I wouldn't be speaking to her if I did not have a pulse. And that she was getting more agitated was agitating. So I just decided I was out of there, but I don't remember making a decision. But I found myself next in a very warm environment, surrounded by grayness. And
not grays, the people, the beings that we talk about all the time, just grayness, huh?
I wasn't alone, and I really, truly believe that I was someplace. I've come to, just as a human, at my age now, think that maybe this is a corridor of consciousness we all go through, because grayness is kind of an iconic aspect of almost dying. It's reflected in literature and movies, yada, yada.
But could you see structure to it, or just it?
No, no. Well, yes, in a way, because I could, quote-unquote, see that it was, this grayness was made up of flints or glints of brilliant light, like a lighter would give off without a flame.
All right.
Mixed up in a mass of what I used to call bottomless pits, but now I would say black holes. They had depth. There was dimension. And that was interesting, but I was distracted by the fact that I was warm and that I felt like I was waiting for something. And I might add here, what I'm about to say, I don't say lightly or with very good vocabulary, because what happened next was divine, but in the expression of a light that, for lack of a better word, just exploded around me and encompassed everything with I was right at the very center, and I could, again, with quote, see. I was seeing, however, George, but I mean, I don't know how to explain this, but I could see this light going out in all directions, but at the same time, endlessly layering back on itself. And I had cognition in the fact that I felt like I was beholding eternity. So it wasn't just in a linear fashion, but it was in dimensions, and it was endless, and that I had come from someplace. I was going to someplace. It was all right. And such intense love. I don't think I could have responded.
Were you aware that you were dying?
No, at that time, all I could be aware of was, well, what I said, and again, I put it in quotes, was homie home. And interesting that Jeff Long was talking about that feeling of being home. But homie home, I later learned from my parents, is what I used to say when I was a toddler learning language and we'd been away from the house and we were driving back into the neighborhood, and I would recognize certain neighborhood milestones, and I would say, homie home, homie home. And so it was a Gucci Goo moment for my parents. I don't remember ever saying that personally. But
a Gucci Goo moment?
Well, you know, when parents are think that their child is just the cutest thing ever born moment. So when I would say homie home, they thought that was adorable.
Did you see anything of that scared you during this period?
Not yet. So after forever, I was in this light, and I can refer people to, I mean, I'm not trying to plug After the Light, but, I mean, that's a much longer book than I'll have time to talk with you this evening. But, I mean, in greater detail, my near-death experience is certainly in that book. It kicks off the whole point of After the Light. But for radio's sake, I was in that experience forever with the light, and there was communication, and I asked questions any fool would ask. I got answers that were like remembering. And then I was told I had to go back. I argued. I lost that argument. I was sent back. I found myself about the distance of 4 feet from my own body, lying on the ground. And in my perspective, I was lying next to it by about 4 feet. And my very first reaction after what is certainly the most secret experience of my life so far was a joke, because I'd actually flunked my driver's test, ergo working on both licenses. And it was because I couldn't parallel park within 4 feet of the curb. So my first reaction was, I can't even park myself. And that's pretty light in terms of a response, but it was, I think, my way of reacting to a complete shock, because me, Kim, was not in that, what we would call, body.
How did this change your life when you came out of it?
In a way that I had to stare at myself in the mirror and try to figure out what was different about me. I had plans. They evaporated. They involved staying in Kansas and settling down and being taken care of. And instead, I passed my driver's license and got a car. And I had a life preview at the end of my near-death experience, which we've covered about half of, if that. But just FYI. And part of it involved seeing a place where mountains met waters, so it wasn't Kansas. And I got my hamster Toto in a birdcage in the front seat, and we headed west because that's where the mountains were. And that's when the profound effect of leaving home and...
Kim, I got to stop you right now. I am so lost from your near-death experience.
Well, you asked me the question about how it changed me. It changed me because I left the Midwest, wound up in Seattle, being a social worker, MSW, with an expertise in death and dying and an expertise in near-death experiences.